Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Terrence McCauley Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence McCauley. Today, we're going to be talking about my first in the series of westerns called Where the Bullets Fly. It was published in 2018 by Kensington Books, and it is an award-winning novel that I happen to be very proud of. It was not only my first foray into westerns, but it was also the first in a series of books that involve Sheriff Aaron Mackey. I think the best thing to do is to begin at the beginning, so let me read the back of the book to you, and then we can go on to discuss it from there. Surrounded by ranches, farms, and precious metal mines, the town of Dover Station, Montana, is ripe for the plucking. It's up to Sheriff Aaron Mackey to keep the peace and keep the dregs of humanity from trying to make a killing. Where the bullets fly, vengeance reigns. If anyone can smell an investment opportunity, it's railroad men and big city bankers. They're not the kind of folks that Sheriff Mackey is used to dealing with. But greed is greed, and if anyone knows how money can drive men to murder, it's the sheriff of a boom town like Dover Station. But when Mackey is forced to gun down a pair of saloon rats, it begins a powder keg of trouble, with a quick-burning fuse of vengeance named Alexander Darabont. This bloodthirsty psychopath wants to kill the sheriff for killing his buddies, and he plans to get his revenge using a highly combustible mix of fire, fear, and dynamite. Mackey's not sure how he's going to stop this blood-crazed lunatic, but it's going to be one heck of an explosive and very violent showdown. Now, when I began writing this Western, I knew it was my first Western, and it was also going to be my first foray into a new genre. Before that, I had written thrillers and I had written crime novels. The thrillers were modern-day spy techno-thrillers, if you will. It was part of my university series. And the crime noir novels were the first books I ever wrote, which were set in 1930s New York. I was glad that I had written in other genres before I began writing in Westerns, because writing a Western is not as easy as you might think. Every genre presents its own challenges and its own unique ways that a writer has to approach it. But Westerns are something different, because everybody has a different idea of what a Western is supposed to be. And that's not the fault of the reader. That's not even a result of the changing readership over the years. It's the way the genre has been presented itself. If you take a look at the history of Westerns, and most of us, let's face it, were either introduced to the genre by Louis L'Amour books or Zane Grey books, or 1950s television and movies. The genre has always portrayed the era in which it was written more than it's been portraying the era in which it's set. Give you an example. In the 1940s and 50s, it was a more patriotic time, and American Westerns tended to be a bit more about the lone hero going up against all of the bandits and seizing the day and saving the day. In the 1960s, it was a campier time, and some of the Westerns had more of a campier tone to it, a tongue-in-cheek style. I'm thinking of movies like The War Wagon and others where the tough guys were tougher than normal, and even John Wayne wasn't immune from mailing in a couple of performances here and there that were bordering on camp at the time. And then you approach the 70s, and you have movies where they're a bit revisionist, and they are not as aw shucks patriotic as the other movies in the genre had been. You get movies where you have the anti-hero becomes the new hero. A lot of the Clint Eastwood Westerns that came out at the end of the 60s and early 70s show this, and so do a lot of the other ones. Culpeper Cattle Company, The Long Riders, The Wild Bunch, which many people consider a Western, They all had the anti-hero as their character, the one who didn't fit in, the one who actually broke the law, the villain. Then we go into the 80s and the 90s, and you didn't see a lot of Westerns made then, but what Westerns you did see were either epics or heavily focused on action. By heavily focused on action, I mean Silverado, and by epic, I do mean Lonesome Dove and Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner. On the contrary, you had Tombstone with Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer, and both movies have their own set of fans. I know I prefer Tombstone with Kurt Russell, but Wyatt Earp is a perfectly good movie with Kevin Costner as well. So that's what you're facing when you come into a Western book and when you decide that you're going to write one. And certainly, I faced these challenges when I decided to write one. What kind of Western did I want to write? And I already read the description of the book to you, but it doesn't really explain my personal approach to it. My personal approach was that I wanted to do something that did not transcend the genre. Like I said in the earlier podcast, I hate that term. It's an empty term. I don't think it says much. But there is something to be said about trying to take your own spin on the genre itself. And that's what I tried to do with Where the Bullets Fly. I needed to have identifiable characters, but that didn't mean they had to be cookie cutter. In Aaron Mackey, I have a complicated protagonist. He's not a hard drinker. He's not a womanizer. He is a haunted man who has had his military career in the U.S. Cavalry cut short by an unfortunate incident we don't really get into. Now, does he turn to the bottle? Does he do what so many other protagonists have done in other Westerns and set to destroy himself? No. Instead, he shuts himself off and throws himself into his work. He returns home after he's thrown out of the army as a captain, and with his friend, Buffalo Soldier Billy Sunday, who's a sergeant in the cavalry, he winds up enforcing the law in his hometown of the fictional town of Dover Station, Montana. Now, the reason why I picked a fictional town, even though Montana is rich with fantastic towns that have great history, I didn't want to get trapped into one specific town and one specific history. I wanted to write my own kind of town so I could arrange the what happens in the book in my own way. The only place that's factual is Helena, which was and still is the capital of the then territory because it's set in 1888 and is now the capital of the state of Montana. In Billy and in Mackey, I wanted to have a friendship where the reader never has to doubt where their loyalties lie. Now, that was important to me because I didn't want there to be any friction between the two friends, which is what you see in so many of these various Westerns and various stories. There's either a friction between the mayor and the sheriff, or the two best friends square off like they did in, or let each other down like they did in High Noon and in a couple of other stories. One with Henry Fonda and Anthony Quinn. I can't remember the name of it right now. I think it was Warlock. Great movie. But I didn't want to do any of that. I wanted the reader to be able to focus on the story that I wanted to tell. I wanted the reader to be able to enjoy the plot that I was laying out for them, where I not only have complicated protagonists, but I also have complicated people around the protagonists. Mackey is not a popular sheriff. People, ironically enough, do not mind having a black deputy. And I wanted to make sure that I did include a black deputy because I wanted to include that part of our history. A lot of the diversity of the West gets lost in 1950s television, gets lost in some of the movies, and I did not want it to get lost in my book. I wanted it to be an accurate portrayal, and it's important for people to know there's a lot more than just Bass Reeves to talk about when you are talking about the African-American contribution to the Old West. The Old West is African-American history, and it is part of American history in general. It's important to remember that, in my opinion. I also have complicated love interests. Aaron, when he was a captain, fell in love with a rich socialite who was also married at the time, named Catherine Campbell from Boston, Massachusetts. He, unfortunately, since she was married and he was single, they were, at the time they met, their love went unrequited. But after Aaron left the Army, he falls in love with and marries a local girl named Mary, who's an Irish immigrant who is hard-headed and angry that the man she married is different than the one she dreamed of, the gallant cavalry officer in his uniform. Mackey's a damaged person from his disappointment in the cavalry, and he is not what she expected. She was expecting a more complete man and not a complicated one. That's a little bit different of a love triangle than you see in some Westerns. The sheriff is unaware of the affections of the ravishing young lady and is caught unaware of it. And in my instance, I have a very sharp sheriff who is caught in a bind because he's married to one person he doesn't want to be married to anymore. And he also has a woman of quality with whom he has a wonderful relationship. So he's caught in the middle. Another supporting character is his father, Happy Brendan Mackey. And he is something of the comic relief in the book, but a dry humor. I didn't want to have the cackling old Walter Brennan type character in the form of comic relief. Pappy comes across as a very sarcastic, very cutting individual who was a brave person in his own right. He wins the Congressional Medal of Honor during the Civil War for his actions at a battle where he was serving under General Sherman. So there's Brendan has his own contributions to make and his own contributions to the book and to the overall plot. Now, all of these people, and there are some others as well that are thrown in there, they're all living in Dover Station, which becomes the apple of the eye of a wandering marauder named Alexander Darabont. His aim is just to exist and to live and to kill. And if you happen to be in his way, then that's your problem. And it becomes a problem here in the book. That's what makes Where the Bullets Fly a little bit different than everybody else's Westerns. Because Aaron is not a white hat. Billy is not a white hat. They are not pure of heart. They do have history. They do have a past. And they do have things that they have done that they are not especially proud of. And just like Darabont, he's not a black hat. He's charming. He does take care of the people who follow him. And he is driven by his own music that nobody else can hear. And like I said before, if you get in his way, then you're in trouble. So, of course, I had a book to write, and I put Darabont as the person who not only lays siege to the town, but also winds up taking a main character with him when he breaks off the siege. Now, that's when the conflict of the book really gets interesting. Because as Darabont disappears and takes his hostages with him, they're mostly ladies of the evening who work in a house of ill repute on the edge of town that Darabont was able to easily attack and burn down during the siege. He also at that time takes Catherine, Mackey's love interest, with him. Now, Mackey has a decision to make. Does he go after them alone, or does he go after them with a posse? The problem is the town doesn't agree with him. The town he's just saved sees him as a hero, but they don't see any reason why they have to risk their necks for a group of women who worked in a house of ill repute. The people of the town aren't particularly anxious to go rescue the women to whom they were customers. So it was. It sets up an interesting dynamic where Mackey quickly goes from hero to asking the unreasonable of the town. And he cobbles together a posse to go after Darabont on the trail. And what happens after that? Well, you're going to have to read the book in order to find that part out. So, on the whole, I cover a lot of themes in Where the Bullets Fly. It's about a town that's eager to forget its past and embrace the future. It's about a villain that's set on stopping the future through good old-fashioned blood and terror. It's about a sheriff who opts to do the unpopular and impossible by trying to rescue the women Darabont has captured. And if he can't bring them back alive, he's going to bring back Darabont dead. So there's a lot of different things going on in this book, some familiar, some not. I definitely wrote it for a modern audience. It had to be familiar enough so that fans of the Westerns will enjoy them and they'll be able to relate to it, but at the same time, it has to appeal to today's reader. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand when they read Zane Grey and Louis L'Amour. Both giants in the genre, I understand that. But they were writing for a different audience at a different time. They had to write for a different tone. There wasn't much swearing in those books. Now, I don't think that you need to necessarily go as far as Deadwood did when it comes to cursing. But at the same time, I do think that today's reader demands more of a realistic engagement between the characters and expressions of anger. And I think there's a happy medium there. And I know that working with my publisher, I try to strike that with every book. There isn't a ton of cursing, but at the same time, there are certain events that happen where a little bit of blue language adds just the right color to the situation. I wrote my Western with realistic characters, too. Deputy Billy Sunday is a former Buffalo soldier who's Mackie's best friend from his cavalry days, and he contributes to the story in a meaningful way, just like all the women in the story contribute to the story in a meaningful way. I'm not going to write something that's somewhat realistic just to pander to a particular group. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means I have respect for my reader. And for every Calamity Jane that was out there, there were thousands of women who were not Calamity Janes. They were not gunfighters. And there's some debate as to how much of a gunfighter or a frontierswoman Calamity Jane herself really was. But that doesn't mean that they have to be the cringing school marm who finds herself tied to the railroad tracks and needs rescuing in the end of the third act either. The women in my books are, whether it's the Westerns or the crime noir novels or the thrillers, they're always strong and they always add a certain amount of gravitas and improve the protagonists and prove to be interesting characters in their own right. They're not just window dressing, and they're not just there to push forward a plot point. They're there because they belong in the story. Same thing for Billy. Billy isn't just a regular character that I wrote who was white to start off with, and then I just conveniently make him black. Throughout the story, I remind the reader and the audience that he is African American, and sometimes there are people whose attitudes do not accept him. And he doesn't care, and neither does Aaron, because at the core of this book is their friendship and their loyalty to each other. That's the kind of story that I enjoy telling. And it's the kind of story I think that whether you're new to the genre or you've read lots of Westerns in your life, you might enjoy this one. Give Where the Bullets Fly a try. It's the first in the series. You don't have to read them all in order. But it's always good to be able to start with at least one book early in the series and see where the characters go and how the writer grows. And I found myself growing quite a bit after I got the feedback I did on this book. I didn't know if I was going to write a sequel. I had always wanted to write a Western, and I did, and I was happy with it. But then once Kensington was interested in it, and they said, well, we'd love a second one, and put it on a train, have a train be part of it. And I was able to put my thinking cap on, and a few months later, I had the sequel, which was called Dark Territory, and that is a book that we are going to cover in our next podcast. So if you're looking to get your feet wet and you want to take a look at my Westerns, you can find them anywhere you want on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and always in your independent bookstore. If they don't have it, they can easily order it. It's also available in Kindle and available on audiobooks as well. I'd always love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you about my writing, my podcasting, or any ideas that you have for future shows. So you can always reach me via email at Terrence, T-E-R-R-E-N-C-E, at TerrenceMcCauley.com. That's T-E-R-R-E-N-C-E, McCauley, M-C-C-A-U-L-E-Y.com. I know that's a complicated name, but that's the one they stuck on me in the hospital. You can also reach me on my various social media platforms or via my website, www.TerrenceMcCauley.com. I already spelled it out. I'm not going to torture you by spelling it out again. That's just about all the time we have for today. I thank you for joining me, and I look forward to talking to you next time about the second book in the Mackey series called Dark Territory. You have been listening to the Terrence McCauley podcast, and I thank you for your attention. Be well, everybody.